Okay, folks, it is 2:03. And I know we've got an extensive agenda to cover today, so time is of the essence. All right, I'm going to call everybody to order and welcome you all to the August 28th, 2024 meeting of the Historic Preservation Commission. The purpose of the commission is to provide for the protection, enhancement, perpetuation, and use of areas having a special historical, cultural, or aesthetic interest or value in order to promote the health, prosperity, and general welfare of the people. The preservation of this heritage is of basic and vital importance for the development and maintenance of the community's tourism, its culture, and for the protection of property values because of their association with history. This commission is appointed by City Council and is not affiliated with any for-profit or non-profit organizations. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance are used by the Board to determine the compatibility of proposed changes and new development that is visible from the public right-of-way, including streets, lanes, and sidewalks within the Savannah Local Historic Conservation Districts. The Board cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance. Items such as land use, landscaping, parking availability, traffic noise, impact on property values, and interior arrangement of structures are not within the Board's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denial of a certificate of appropriateness. Similarly, personal preferences will not be the basis for decisions. Would everybody please turn off their cell phones? Members of the Board receive an electronic agenda the week before the meeting and individually visit the sites of the projects. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and then rescheduled. Were any projects not properly posted this month? Hearing none, we move on. The consent agenda. These agenda items have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards. The visual compatibility factors and design standards have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. Is there any member of the public or board member who wishes to remove an item from the consent agenda and return to the regular agenda? If no projects are removed, we can ask for a motion to approve for the consent agenda. Can I have a motion, please?
Katrina Horner, I make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Kathy Levine, a second.
Okay. Let's have a vote.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Mabel Lee, approve.
Katrina Horner, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Okay, motion passes. Okay, adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion to adopt the agenda?
Richardson, I offer a motion that we adopt the agenda.
Virginia Mobley, second.
Pat Richardson, approved.
Kathy Levine, approved.
Mabel Lee, approved.
Katrina Horner, approved.
Kirsten Connor, approved.
Virginia Mobley, approved.
Pam Miller, approved.
Okay, minutes from the previous meeting are attached to the agenda. Are there any additions or corrections to the meetings from this previous meeting?
Virginia Mobley, I make a motion that we approve the minutes from the July 24th, 2024 meeting.
Pat Richardson, I second.
All right, Pat.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Mabel Lee, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Okay. Are there any items to be removed from the final agenda today? No? Okay. Can we get on then continued agenda? There's nothing on the continued agenda either. Excellent. Any requests for, no requests for extension? So we'll move on to the regular agenda. Okay, so first item on the regular agenda today is the petition of Lynch Associates Architects Andrew Lynch, AIA 24004043 COA, 625 West 37th Street, new construction, small parts 1 and 2.
Thank you, Jonathan Mellum. It's good to see you all, as always. So thanks to Kelly. We have our fancy new way of presenting projects. So as you noted, the property in question is 625 West 37th Street in the Kyler Brownville Historic District. The applicant is proposing the construction of a new two-story accessory building in the rear yard. So the approval request is for new construction small part one and two. What you have up before you right now is the proposed view from the lane and the side east elevation. Here are some of the photos of the existing conditions. This block of 37th Street has a really wonderful collection of historic homes that have survived, and now we're seeing a lot of them being restored. The lane has seen a loss of many of the original structures that were on it. So we're starting to see some new construction coming back, but there's still a lot of open areas, as you can see here. Sorry. The existing is just an open parking area on the rear of the building. So let me get in here on the site plan a little bit. So again, large house fronting on 37th Street. Here's the lane behind it. The applicant is proposing this new accessory building in the rear yard. Here's a comparison of the height of the proposed accessory building to the primary dwelling. I'll just walk you through these quickly, and I know from our pre-meeting, you all had some questions, which I know the applicant is ready to explain. So on the first floor, three-car garage, access to the second floor, and then there's a small Belvedere tower, however you want to describe it, located at the top with the roof, the hipped roof here. These are the four elevations. This is the primary elevation facing the lane. Again, the three carriage house doors, ganged and single windows. This is actually facing into the yard, so will not be terribly visible from the lane. And then you have the staircase here that provides access to the second floor with a dormer window. And then here you have this little Belvedere or tower. The applicant provided, hold on a second, section drawings, as well as these are probably some of the most important ones here. So again, this is a view from the lane, three bays wide, with the stair that provides access to the second story, dormer windows. And then you have these two side elevations. This is the rear elevation. It will be facing the primary residence, the house. And then this is that tower element that is going to be a storage space. I'll let the project architect walk you through that. So just to give you an idea of the context here, this is the primary residence that's fronting on 37th Street, and then this is the back. So it's just an open parking area that pretty common you see around Savannah. Here's the property in question. As I noted a few minutes ago, it's a pretty intact row. It's really wonderful to see along this block. But as you can see, if you've been down the lane, if you're out at the site, most of the accessory buildings that were here were lost over time, which is not uncommon to see. In terms of the base zoning, it meets all the standards in terms of lot coverage, height, footprint, et cetera. In terms of staff review, staff felt that the standards were met. We are recommending approval for small parts one and two for a two-story carriage house accessory dwelling. We did have one condition, and we apologize if the applicant included it and we did not see it. We did not see any product specifications for any of the proposed exterior lighting. During our pre-meeting, a commission member noted that some of the windows, there was a question about the operability of some of the windows. As we noted, there is an allowance for accent windows to be fixed, but not just regular windows. So I know the applicant will walk you all through that, and we'll also address the concern or question related to the Belvedere or tower. So with that, again, we are recommending approval. We feel it is meets the visual compatibility standards. The houses on 37th Street are pretty large, we think it's a positive thing in terms of actually reestablishing. This is one of those lanes, I'm sure you've been down many of them in Savannah, where because so many of the buildings are gone, the lane kind of loses any feeling of actually being a lane. It's just a grassy thing that people drive down, and then it kind of bleeds into all the properties that are around it. And so this will hopefully be kind of an initial step in kind of reestablishing that streetscape on the lane. So with that, I know you asked some of the questions during the pre-meeting, but it might be easier if I just turn it over to the project architect, and he can walk you through the plans and address specifically the question about the tower, the Belvedere, the operable or inoperable windows, and any other questions you may have.
Good afternoon. I'm Andy Lynch with Lynch Associates Architects, or the agent for the owner. Thank you, staff, for their diligent review. We don't take any exceptions with their comments. I don't believe we had selected a light fixture yet, so we will provide that to staff as part of our application. As part of, I know there's a question on the height issue. We were actually looking at that third floor. Under the building code, it actually doesn't comply as a story. It's really more of a mezzanine. They're using it kind of in the, as an attic use, where they're going to store stuff in that area. So they needed a little bit more room. Based on the requirements, we can only go 750 feet on the building footprint. So we were a little limited in size. And so they needed a little bit more program. So we did think that that massing should go on the back side of the property, so it's, or the back side of the building, so it wasn't visible from the right of way. So we didn't think it was as impactful. As far as the, there's a question about the windows. We don't have any problem making those operable. I think we plan for operable windows on all of the street facing side. So the, I think the side that the question came up was on the back elevation, which is not, I think it's these, let's see my cursor here, but it's, I think it was these two windows, which were kind of accent windows, but, I'm sure the owner doesn't have an issue making those operable casement windows. Be happy to answer any other questions you have.
Do any members of the board have any questions for the petitioner?
Kathy Levina, I just have a couple of questions. What's the definition of third story for the per building code?
Well, technically it's under 50% of the floor below it and opens to the floor below it. So technically it qualifies as a mezzanine level, which is really part of the second story. It's not really considered a third story.
You're calling it a mezzanine.
I mean, it's technically a mezzanine. It's, again, it's kind of uninhabitable space, but it's.
So it's not being finished out?
It's not being finished out. But even if it was, it's not really part of the.
Well, it sort of is because there's
it's a permanent stair. It's not a third story under the building code, I guess.
Even though there's a permanent stair going up to it?
Well, they just need access to it. So,
well,
yes.
I mean, you pull
I guess they could too. Do a, yeah, I guess they could do a.
But that's what I'm asking. I'm just confused as to the definition. I'm trying to figure out a definition of a third story versus a two and a half story. So the dormer gives you two and a half story, right? You've got space in your attic.
I don't know if half stories are really qualified under the building code, but,
What we do know is that a carriage house is only supposed to be two stories. So that's, I guess, the confusion.
Right.
To me, that's the confusion. Is this a third story if we say, hey, this tower is not a third? I mean, how many more towers are we going to get, you know, in a carriage house?
Yeah,
and I guess I've never seen a tower in a carriage house here in Savannah. I've seen a lot of beautiful carriage houses. I continue to see beautiful new construction carriage houses, and I know they go up higher. But in Savannah, obviously, the carriage houses are limited to two-story, and that's where I'm trying to figure out, in my mind, the definition.
Right. I mean, I guess you see it probably more in the downtown area where mezzanines are not considered part of a floor for a project. And so I guess we were trying to make this project completely by right.
Yeah.
And so under that definition, technically we would meet the standard. But again, I don't disagree. And that's why we wanted to place it on the back side of the property where it's not visible from the right
of way. Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely. If it's going to be, it's certainly going to be there. And then my other question about the tower is, why did you choose a flat roof?
Because we were trying to stay
flat roofs on carriage houses either.
Yeah, we actually would have preferred to put a hip roof on it, but we were trying to stay under the height limit. And so, I mean, I would love if the board would allow us to put a hipped roof on top of it, we would do that, like a low slope hip.
Okay.
If you look at the images though, like probably this one is the best one. The right of way is pretty narrow, obviously in the lane. So even if it was a hipped roof, I don't think you would actually see it. But again, we would probably have preferred to put a hip roof on it, but just because of the height restrictions, we didn't want to have to go for a variance. So.
Do the rafter tails correspond with any detail in the main house? The open rafter tails, I guess.
They have rafter tails, but they're underneath the eaves of the roof line. So.
They're exposed rafter tails, not brackets.
I believe so.
Okay.
I mean, if that was a sticking point, I don't know that we would have an issue.
I mean, it just goes with the flat roof. It's just an element that to fit visually, being visually compatible with the main house,
right?
The architectural, you know, imitate the architectural style of the main house. I was just questioning those two things.
I mean, I don't know that we'd have a problem getting rid of the rafter tails if that was a sticking point. I thought we did have some.
I mean, I would almost like to see a hip roof more than the flat roof.
Right. I mean, we would prefer that as well. Again, it's not really not visible from the right of way. So we thought we would have a little latitude in what we did back there, but certainly we would prefer to do a hip roof if the board finds that acceptable.
And then it would match. I just think it would be more compatible with the architectural style of the main house. If you allow the tower, because we've got a tower, we've got dormer windows. There's a lot going on in the carriage house. But I do understand that those buildings on 37th Street are a little bit larger than and more elaborate than what you might find elsewhere. Let me see. I guess those are my only two questions for you, because Jonathan cleared up the other questions I had.
Okay. Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Does anybody else have any comments or questions to ask? Hearing none, I'd like to open this up for any members of the public that would like to make a comment.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. Our ARC appreciates the overall design of the carriage house as it is modern, but is compatible and fits the typology of the typical carriage houses. We agree that the loft or tower will be mostly obscured from the lane view and sits at a level that's in line with the main level of the carriage house cornice line, or the main house cornice line, because of its flat roof. However, we feel that the tower element itself is inappropriate and not visually compatible.
Is there anybody online? No? Okay. We'll now enter board discussion. No further comment from the public will be required at this time unless asked upon by members of the commission.
Vice Chair.
Pat?
Pat Richardson, no comment.
Kathy?
Kathy Levine, I'm still concerned about the tower element. I feel that it's, you know, a carriage house should be two stories. I understand. I don't see a need. You've got a half story because of the dormer already. You've got the attic, which is accessible for storage as well as HVAC. Maybe, you know, the solution would be to increase a little bit the slope of the attic, the slope of the roof. I just don't see the tower as historically appropriate. And if the tower is approved by the board, I think we, I would feel that the flat roof certainly isn't historically appropriate. And flat roofs aren't allowed on, aren't allowed where they are not historically appropriate. So I would eliminate the flat roof, go with a hip roof, and remove the rafter tails, which is more of a craftsman style architecture versus Queen Anne or a Foursquare or whatever y'all are calling the main house.
May Boley, I'd be fine to take the tower off. I think I'd like to ask the petitioner, maybe I should have earlier, sorry. Or, and also you, Jonathan, if we were to say remove the tower, approve otherwise, you know, and fix the fixed windows into operable windows, is that the kind of thing we could approve today? I'm asking because I want to ask the client if they'd prefer an approval today, losing that feature, or a comeback in 30 days redesign.
I'll let the applicant answer.
Mm-hmm. I guess we would have to confer with our client. I mean, I guess we would prefer to have the approval. Again, I would remind the board that these are all, you know, items that are not visible from the right of way, mm-hmm. and they seem to be outside of the purview of the board's review. But mm-hmm. obviously, we have to honor whatever y'all think.
So you would prefer an approval today as opposed to a continuation to revisit that?
We would.
Even without the tower?
I suppose so.
Okay, thank you. Just wanted to know. Thank you. So for me, I'm open to board discussion about whether or not you guys feel it's worth taking it off because it's not super visible. I'm kind of open to persuasion. I totally take Kathy's point and Ellie's from HSF. Thank you.
Katrina Hornung. As it kind of does qualify as a mezzanine and is less than that 50%, and it is minimally visible from the right of way, I understand the client's desire to create more space, or the petitioner, I'm sorry, petitioner's desire to create more space for the client. I am inclined to approve staff recommendations. Thank you.
Kirsten Connor, I'm in agreeance with May and Kathy on the tower situation. It is still visible from the lane, maybe not as much as other features because it is in the rear, but I find it very visually incompatible with the typical carriage house style.
Virginia Mobley, I have to agree with Kathy. I don't think that this, whether you want to call it a loft or a mezzanine or whatever, is really in keeping with the style of the houses that are in that area. Yes, the hip roof would be more compatible with what's around it, but the structure itself is just, I can see it's going to be visible. Maybe if you are driving down the street in your car, you're not going to notice it. But if you are on the street, you will notice it. And I definitely support operable windows.
Ann Miller, I tend to agree with the rest of the board in that I still am not real clear about what constitutes a third floor. Having said that, I don't think the design of the tower fits, but I'll go with the board. Thank you.
All right. Now, I'm going to throw in the devil's advocate just to, for ha-has, but if you look at 407 East Anderson, which is almost on the corner of Havisham and Anderson, if you go and look, pull up a street view of that, that would be the only way that I would see that you would have any argument, where it has a, it's not really, it's a mezzanine level because the back of the house has a flat roof with a upper story terrace and then a interesting shaped. So yeah, if you go around, which is, and it is visible from the public right away. So that would be an argument of something that you could say walks into that spirit, right? I'm sure it was, but if you were drawing on comparables of a historic home and things that, and it is kind of a cool, I actually kind of like that place. I always have kind of admired it.
Virginia Marble, yes, it's kind of cool, but it was not there originally.
No, I appreciate that.
It is the work of some students that created it without a permit.
That would be their draw on, like, here is something that's comparable, right?
Okay.
That was just because I have no vote in this, so therefore I'm just bringing it up to, for the record, that that may be where the design cues came from. Okay, anybody want to make a second comment? If not, are we ready to make a motion? So, Mr. Lynch, so we, it appears through the kind of close discussion going up here off mic, that our board is going to make a motion to approve without the tower, or so would you prefer to continue it till next month and
talk to you? Not especially. We would probably prefer to.
It's either, you know, they're not going to approve it as it stands. So would you rather us approve it with the modifications today so you can go back and then just make the alterations, or would you like to go back and ask your client what they would like to do?
I guess we'd go ahead and approve it as.
Okay.
You all see fit, and then we'll, if we want to come back later on with some amendment,
okay. We can do that. At least that way, you know, I'd rather you have a voice in that process.
Sure.
Okay. Fantastic. Thank you. All right. Go ahead and make your motion.
Kathy Libina, I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of Lynch Associates Architect 24-004043-COA 625 West 37th Street, New Constructions 1 and 2, with the following conditions. One, provide the product specification for the proposed exterior lighting, and two, remove the tower and submit to staff revised drawings for approval. And three, install fixed windows install double hung windows where fixed, or casement windows where the fixed windows are present. Because the petition is otherwise in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Pat Richardson, second.
Okay, let's call for a vote. Pat?
Pat Richardson, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Mabel Lee, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Virginia Melby, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next, we move on to the streetcar district. Petition of A and C Brock Holdings LLC, Amy Brock, 24000404 COA 1605 Abercorn Street, a demolition of a contributing property.
So again, the applicant is requesting demolition of a contributing building. The building as is was constructed around 1907, but the Continual Investment Company was constructed as a two-story structure with a two-story rear porch and a partial width one-story front porch. By 1966, a one-story side element constructed. That was likely the porch chair that you see now. By 1994, the front porch had been enclosed. And by February of 2005, the two-story front porch was under construction, and it was completed by 2007. So a little bit of project history for this particular building. Back in January of this year, staff received an application to carry out some work on the building. According to the project description, the applicant was requesting to add a back deck with stairs to the back of the property to match the handrails, pickets, and posts from the front porch, and to replace the front and side doors and select windows. The applicant was notified in February that the project would need to be heard by the HPC and that additional information would be required. On February 8th, staff was notified that the front porch had been removed without review from us. This was notified by code compliance. And then on February 14th, the building caught on fire and staff was notified the following day. A condemnation order was put on the building by code compliance in the city. As far as I'm aware, no demo order has been issued by the city, but that's just based on what I know. So again, now the applicant's up for demolition of this building. Applicant did provide an engineer's report, which was provided with the application. The engineer's report stated that due to the fire damage, the home poses a significant hazard and risk of collapse in its current condition. It was also found that given that there was a significant amount of rot and decay of the existing wood frame structure and that there was significant fire damage, the cost of repair to the existing structure would greatly exceed the cost of demolition of the existing home and then reconstruction. There's currently no COA on file for the infill project, but staff felt that in this case, demolition should be heard first given the state of the building and the safety hazard that it poses. While some of the information again was not provided, staff finds that demo is necessary in this case given the condition of the building and given the risk. There are two conditions being placed on recommendation in this case, and the applicant should fulfill them as best they can. So with that, staff recommends approval of the demolition of the contributing building at 1605 Abercorn with the following conditions because the standards have been met. One being the building being documented as best it can, and then salvage whatever remains within that building. Board, have any questions?
This is Mabel Lee. You said the city obviously didn't issue any emergency demolition on this one.
Not that we're aware of.
Not that you're aware of. How would we clarify, I'm asking, how would we find out if it was something that the city did intend to put on a list for emergency demolition versus not? I know that those do occur sometimes in the case of hazardous structures, and I'm wondering what that mechanism is. Do you have any idea?
I know there's a similar, there's another case where emergency demo is being considered.
Right.
And we have been looped on emails
okay.
in that case with the city talking about trying to figure out what's happening. So okay. I'm assuming something similar would happen, but I'm not sure.
Okay, interesting. So it seems likely not.
Yeah.
We don't know for sure.
I feel like they would have notified us otherwise.
You know. Thank you.
Virginia Mobley, is the request for demolition coming through the city or through the financial institution or just?
It's through the property owner.
Through the property owner.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, because the application is not, there's a lot of things on here that they have not provided information about. And one of which is the fact that they don't list it as being a revenue-producing property. And it was up until January. So that's all missing from the application. Can we request that this information be provided? I mean, that the application be completed.
You can, yes, that's what the board would like. But again, for staff's perspective was we were concerned about safety, so that's why we didn't request everything. Anything else?
Have they, Kenya Mobley, have they presented any proposal as to what they plan to do with this piece of property?
I know they are going to redevelop it. I believe they do own the property next door as well, but I have not seen any plans, conceptual or otherwise, for what they're proposing.
So we don't have anything to say, okay, if you tear down the burned building, you're going to put this in its place.
Yeah, so there's no form application now. And again, we've talked to them briefly, but that we haven't seen anything yet fleshed out.
So why are we rushing to do a demolition?
The public safety.
It's what?
These are all very good questions. But I know from Kelly's done a great job with this, with discussions with the city. There's a concern. We don't want to be seen as holding this up and then this building collapses onto the sidewalk or vagrants get in there, which I think has the owner had indicated has been happening, and the building collapses and it kills people. That would obviously not be a, if the structure has to come down irregardless, our number one priority is public safety. And we felt it was made sense to get the building down. We will definitely, you all will be reviewing whatever has to replace it. Right. But I know that's, I don't want to speak for the city, but the city's view was it needs to come down. If the city had said, and if their engineering report had said this building can be saved, we of course would not be advocating for it to be torn down.
Was there a fire marshal report provided with the application?
I don't believe so.
Was the, Kathy Levina, was the report from RWP Engineering, was that provided by the city or is that provided by the applicant? Now I'm confused.
So that was provided by the applicant. Everything in that packet was given to us by the applicant.
So Virginia Mobley again. So you have not received a report from the city's fire marshal?
No, ma'am.
So we're going on a private engineer that the owner engaged. Okay. I'm going to ask my question. There is another house located in this general vicinity that the owner wants to tear down. The house is... he is letting it fall into disrepair. What's going to prevent him from coming back and saying, well, you let this one on Abercorn be torn down. Why can't I tear mine down? And he can legitimately say that his house has not produced income for the last 6 years.
No, right. So demolition by neglect is the problem.
But his house burned. Initially, it was vacated because it burned.
Okay. I'm not familiar with the house that you're talking about. Obviously, demolition by neglect is a concern of everyone's. And again, we are obviously never rushing to tear down a contributing building. But again, the concern was, given some of the recent weather we've had as well, if this house is going to collapse and potentially kill someone, the idea that, and if it has to come down anyway, it seems like common sense that you would want to move this forward. And I believe we have, do you want to come up here?
Sure.
So we have Jessica Baldwin, who I think you all have met, who's the city's preservation officer. Who can probably chime in a bit.
Hi. So, yeah, the city does have a, what we call it, proactive preservation ordinance here, and we are currently in the process that has not been utilized in the past. And so we are currently in the process of working directly with code enforcement as well as Jonathan and his team to come up with a plan of action so that we can really figure out what those buildings are and take a look. As far as What you're suggesting here, I don't totally know, but this, I know, I just emailed actually the staff to see if there was any kind of report from the city in regards to the conditions of this building. I will say that it seems to be a public safety hazard, and, you know, the city is not in the business of demolishing buildings either. So we try to monitor all of that. I think that each one is its own case by case basis. With the demolition by neglect, we are trying to come up with a plan so that we can begin to proactively reach and contact these homeowners and absentee owners as well, and really try to get them to repair or move forward with citations if that's the route it has to go. We're trying.
Katrina Hornung, so you work for the city and you are not engaged by the applicant in any way?
No, ma'am, but I'm new, and so they probably didn't even know about me when they submitted this application. I've literally been here a month, so I think that probably has something to do with it.
Thank you.
There has been some other applications for demolitions based on fire outside of this board's purview that I have reviewed that are over 40 years old and some things like that that we're hoping that I am taking over and monitoring now. So we're hoping that that demolition process is getting cleaned up on the internal side along with the city, and we're hoping that that will also clarify really strongly with MPC and applicants.
Pat Richardson, given that you work for the city, can't you get with the fire marshal and see if he can issue some type of emergency thing to get the house demolished?
I did email somebody about it, but what do you mean? But I'm not sure I follow.
Can you get the city's fire marshal to come in and say that this is a safety hazard?
Yes,
it needs to be done immediately.
Yes, and we would have our development services team would go in and take a look, and then they would go through code and compliance, and then would follow some directives from there. But that is always a possibility that the fire marshal can come in and say, and the fire marshal trumps everybody because ultimately public safeties are.
Right. My other concern, the reason I brought up that report in the end as well, is great way to get around the house that you don't want to continue to work on is to burn it. We all know it happens.
Absolutely.
So, if there's some untoward accelerant being used in getting that place to partially burn so they can demolish it, we want to know that information.
Sure, I hear
that
you.
That determines what we do moving forward and also what the city should do as far as taking action.
Sure, absolutely.
And this happens not just here, it happens all over the place, yeah?
Absolutely.
There was an incident in my hometown last year where a significant building, it was sold, the people bought it, they built a berm to stop the fire department going down, and then they torched the place.
Oh, yeah.
The fire department couldn't get to the building to put it out.
Came from New York. It's a very active process
and
there.
And now
as
they're
well,
being forced to rebuild the exact same property on the, a recreation of this significant building.
Yeah.
Kirsten Connor. Also, I'm so happy the city has this new position. Thank you for filling it. It's great. If that was the case for you to go back to the fire marshal and get that emergency demo, whatever form it comes in, correct me if I'm wrong, that would classify it as emergency demo, and then it would go straight to whatever contractor is contracted with the city, and we would not be able to have any purview over that. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah, it would be an after. We'd come here and ask for an after-the-fact COA on that.
Yeah, so they will just crush it.
Yeah, because they're not going to wait around, and they're actually absolutely not going to follow a deconstruction process.
So my question is then, can we ask that we get the report from the fire department regardless of what we do today? If we approve a demolition today and say, okay, but we want a copy of that on record to make sure there was no foul play in its initial burning that required it to be demolished. So therefore, when we come back to review, when somebody does redevelop the property, we have a little bit more evidence on how we approach that new development.
Pam Miller, I just have a quick question.
Sure.
The date that that building was looked at was 3 months ago. So what's the process for the fire marshal? Does that ever connect with us at some point? Is that part of what should be the procedure?
Of all the procedures and things I've learned so far, I do not.
With burn buildings?
Yeah, I do not know that one yet. I will find out for you and can come back and let you know.
By now we would be able to have a report, especially, looking at the pictures, I'm no engineer, but it looks like it's ready to fall down. So
yeah,
I think we'd have that by now and be able to add that to our.
I agree. I will do some research about what that procedure is, and I will 100% get back to you with that.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So we are working on coordination with the city, because there is another house on Victory that is collapsing and leaning on the house next to it. And we went out and looked at it probably 4 months ago. Staff alerted the city about it, and they're, you know, we're trying to coordinate this in a better way so that these things, public safety obviously is the ultimate thing, but coordination with the city in terms of everything working.
Kathy Levina.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I had no idea your position was consistent. So that's
well, wonderful. Well, it didn't, I don't think, until news. Recently. So.
So here's my question.
Okay.
This building built and burnt in January 19th, February 19th.
Okay.
Right?
February
19th. 14th.
Right.
February, March, April, May, June, July, 5 months, right?
Sure.
Why has this building not been like stabilized? Why did the city not say, oh my gosh, you know, this is a burnt structure. This is severely compromised. Stabilize it, tarp it, preserve it until, so it has had 5 months with several storms, and continuing to essentially deteriorate.
Sure.
Some proactive measures could have been taken 5 months ago. I've seen a lot of buildings rebuilt that were a lot worse than this one. This is a great, you know, the first floor is in great shape. And I don't care about the piers because the engineer is wrong. But anyway, and it just doesn't make sense to me that the city doesn't have some, you know, an ordinance in place or some sort of plan in place that actually protects these compromised structures, especially in the case of fire.
I don't know to speak directly in terms of fire, but I do know that there has been a large disconnect between my particular department and code enforcement and trying to understand what the problems are within the historic district. And so that is one of my jobs, is to make sure that that kind of connection starts to rehappen so that we're not waiting 5 months for a building that catches fire in February and we're just hearing about it in August.
Okay. And offense.
It's a slow process to get there, but once we get there, it will be much more effective. It's just going to take some steps in some internal organization. You know, those co-compliance officers deal with the entire city and not just downtown or the historic district. So there's a lot on their plates as well. And there's some educational opportunities with them as well. So we are aware of those and we're trying to figure out how to approach them best.
The streetcar district.
Yes, ma'am.
This is in has two code compliance officers.
Yes, ma'am.
So somebody should be able to do something.
I understand, but you know, again, those people also work very hard, so I don't want to discredit them and their hard work. I hear you. I understand that there are gaps, and we are working to figure out where that's coming from and how best we can serve citizens.
This is May Bully. Hi.
Hi.
I'm also very glad to meet you. I think we're all super pumped that this position exists now. It's a little mind-blowing the city of Savannah has existed for so long without a preservation officer or office. So hallelujah, amen. Excited about you digging in on some of these serious issues here in the city. So I have been in this world for a little while, so I have a couple things to say.
Okay.
You can sit down if you like.
Oh,
number one, generally speaking, you know, the city does, I mean, if it's been sitting there for 6 months, if this was going to be an emergency demolition, they probably would have knocked it down by now, or you guys would have heard about it as an emergency demolition. This leads me to believe either there was a lapse in the assessment or it didn't meet the criteria for emergency demolition, which gives me pause, right? I have seen buildings burned worse than this that have been rehabilitated. And I'll give a very specific example. There is one on 37th Street, the Webb House, that was once an HSF revolving fund, still is an HSF revolving fund property. It burned very badly. Everyone considered it to be a total loss. But it did not meet the criteria for emergency demolition. This is a sentimental project for me as HSF, who formerly wasn't so convinced on the role of deconstruction and preservation, engaged Repurpose Savannah, where I was employed at the time, to to remove the structure. And in doing the stabilizing work that we're discussing, removing the hazardous elements that were a threat to public safety, we discovered, and there was also a lot of, it was a hoarder house, so there was a lot of stuff inside. So once we got it cleaned out, we discovered that the majority of the building was absolutely salvageable. And we were able to pivot and say, actually, now that we can see that we've cleaned it out, we've taken down the dangerous elements, and there were dangerous elements for sure, removed them, cleaned it out, and the rest of the building absolutely can be saved, and that building is currently being restored. So I love that story. I preach about that one all the time to say that I think it is worth our consideration as a board to approve a partial exploratory deconstruction, right? To say, or even we can call it partial demolition, but we can call it whatever you want. Removing the hazardous elements and assessing with an engineer, ideally one that's not being contracted by the homeowner, but comes in some way from the city. I know I can't make this happen just by waving a magic wand. I'm just speaking my opinions here. But we can approve a stabilization effort. We can say, you know, you're allowed to deconstruct the damaged portion of the building, at which point you need to reassess whether or not the further demolition is necessary. Right? Is that true? Can we do that?
Cool. Let's ask. Well, Ellie's input from HSF is.
Yeah, so I was just going to give you a little input from my end. For the record, Ellie Isaac, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. I did reach out to the homeowner as a potential of like, hey, can we buy your property through revolving fund? Because like you said, we've done this before. And they had no interest in that because their intention is to rebuild. What they didn't tell me what it was to rebuild, but I do know that the same family owns and operates the business, the psychiatry business that's next door to this property. So I think that there was some assumption down the line that maybe this would become their home, like their main residence. Although that wasn't confirmed, so don't hold me to it. But just know that we tried to reach out and we tried to do, to purchase the property through revolving fund. And our ARC is, obviously we don't want to see a contributing structure be, or even a non-contributing, building be demolished, but obviously we appreciate staff's recommendation for deconstruction. I think your approach is, and this is just kind of side note, I think your approach is smart, but I don't know what the legal ramifications of that are, like if you actually are able to rule in that way. The other thing I'll say too is the after the fact COA that Jessica mentioned. That's what happened with 9 Lincoln. I don't know how many of you were around when 9 Lincoln happened, that was a completely different situation, but that was still an after the fact COA, where they went around us, got a judge to approve demolition, and then they had to come back and do an after the fact COA, on which case we did put stipulations for deconstruction and documentation on that COA. So it was a conditional approval. But I'll leave you with all that for your thoughts. Unless you have questions for me.
This is Mae Bully. Is the petitioner online by any chance?
No,
they're just not here present. I wish they were because I'd like to talk to them about it. I don't know. Pam, do you know if we can approve partial demolition?
The board has the right to say that because the application was incomplete, that they don't want to hear it and they can send it back or have the applicant send in a complete application because it is required to be complete when it comes before this board.
But we don't necessarily have the legal right to only approve a partial demolition of the damaged elements.
That would be up to you because it's a demolition.
That becomes an enforcement issue.
Yeah, it does become enforcement.
That's trickier than just not approving. Unless someone from the NPC or one of you guys stands out there while they partially deconstruct it or demolish it. Mm-hmm. What does partial mean? Do they live with fear? You know, that
you are not wrong, and let's get lunch. I want to point out that we can't enforce stipulation 2 that we've already put on here either. We're doing it at this point purely as sort of emotional and moral leadership because we do know that there is no way to enforce or even define any of these things yet. Incidentally, there is a coalition here in Savannah, which some people in the room are a part of, that are working on these things. And we'd love to chat with you about it. All that to say, you know, even if we can't enforce it, I do think it's worth stating this is what we think ought to happen. So it would be my wish.
Well, and that's going back to my point that we write a motion
that, and if it's not followed when it comes up for redevelopment or reconsideration, mm-hmm. that then we have the tools in place. Like, as I said, having a report to ensure that, you know, if yes. burning was accidental or there was any suspicious foul play. Mm. It does? Where? But who, well, we don't know who it was.
Yeah.
They have video evidence. They have video evidence? Okay.
So it was criminal arson. Okay. Okay. Even regardless of why, you know, we're going to come across these buildings that are damaged, and it's always going to be a matter of, well, is it so damaged? Does it justify? And I heard a little bit of discussion about the economic feasibility, right? And I want to take that seriously too. Somebody wants to say it's cheaper to tear down this damaged historic building and build a new one. Is that compelling enough for us to say, okay, tear it down? Of course, we do want to consider, you know, there is a line when something becomes too cost prohibitive.
And we're also relying on the parties.
Private parties.
Private parties engineering report.
Exactly.
Which is not an independent.
Exactly.
Evaluation.
Well, exactly. So, therefore.
So, is there a civic?
If the board is interested, the applicant said she's been trying to sign in. She just sent a message to him and he's trying to get her on the phone so that she can speak.
Okay. Oh, well. Is there a way we can have an independent civil engineer assess the property?
I mean, that's probably a long game, not immediate for this project. It's something that we should discuss long game, but I don't think that's like reasonable maybe for this one if that mechanism already isn't in place. So it sounds to me like the best thing to do.
Ellie, it looks like she has a,
let's hear it.
Just because of previous experience, the only thing that I would say is just caution, I guess, about overreaching because, same thing, 9 Lincoln, before the after the fact application came through, there was a COA that came through and we had requested, I think it was like a continuance and that they needed to get a secondary structural engineer's opinion. They needed to do all these things to prove the fact that that building needed to be demolished. And then that decision ended up getting overturned because they considered us overreaching from our powers, so, or our duties or whatever that term is. So I would just.
But you are a private nonprofit.
Well, now, that's my role now. Yeah.
But I mean, was this action done in a, by a governing government body?
About for 9 Lincoln?
Mm-hmm.
9 Lincoln, it happened when I was born, when I was the chair of HDVR.
Oh, okay.
That's my involvement was.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
So I got a question for the board based on, there definitely is an element of public safety here. Like we can't, I do agree that it's somewhat urgent that some action be taken to at least either, in my opinion, stabilize, remove the damage and then rebuild the historic building. I would like to hear from the rest of the board if you're inclined to request that they come back with a complete application and put a recommendation that they consider partial.
We do have.
Right.
Hopefully getting them on the petitioner online.
Yeah, perhaps.
So you can then ask the question about deconstruction and public comment.
Public comment.
And then public comment, yeah.
Did you want to wait to hear from the applicant or not?
Yeah, I mean, how likely does it seem that we're going to be able to get her on? Pretty good?
He's given her information on how to call in. Because apparently she's having a problem
connecting.
I got an
email at 2:50. I replied her at 2:55.
Okay.
I haven't heard back from her.
Okay.
It's 3:01. So
let's talk hypotheticals until maybe she can sign on, right? Just in case she can't join us, right? Yeah. So hypothetically, if she can't join us and answer our questions, my question to the board is, are you all inclined to continue this and ask for a complete application, or are we inclined to make some recommendations today because of the public safety issue?
Kirsten Connor, I don't know if this is possible. Maybe we can recommend, like you said, exploratory partial demolition recommendation of deconstruction and then require them to come back with other complete documents at the next meeting or next meeting, whatever. And then we make a final decision if we're allowed to do that.
That includes too.
Kathy Levinas, since we're in discussion, I would like to see them start the MPC policy for documenting the building Because if the fire marshal does go out there and they say immediate demolition, we're going to lose that opportunity. So that somehow, if we could work that into the requirement, the recommendation.
So my question is this. So as it stands with the recommendations that we document, as Kathy's saying, and then rather than traditional go with the deconstruction, couldn't we put a caveat into that point too, that during the deconstruction process, if said deconstruction company finds that it is plausible to salvage the building?
It feels to me, well, if you're asking me.
I am asking you as you're our resident expert.
It feels to me, if I have my way, I would rather approve removal only of the damaged elements rather than approve removal of the whole building, but if it looks okay, save some of it, right? Does this make sense?
Yeah.
The difference between we're going to approve removal, but maybe you'll save it if it looks okay to you versus we are only, as this body, approving removal of the damaged elements through demolition or deconstruction. You know, you're not going to be able to harvest and reuse any of those damaged elements, so I don't mind if it's mechanical demolition. Take the roof off. You know, it's going to the trash. It's cinder.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I was just checking with Caitlin. So the building I mentioned on Victory Drive, which is an entire house that is leaning on the house next door that has collapsed, we went out there April and alerted folks that this building was about to collapse and fall into Victory Drive. Is still there. So it's just in terms of gaps, which we're thrilled that Jessica's here.
Okay.
There, for
you can
demo
see.
Even.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's
right.
That just curious.
724 West Victory. So to give you an idea of how much time can pass where nothing is done.
And that one for sure qualifies for emergency demo. It's falling. Yes, it's falling into the neighbor building.
Yeah.
All right. That's a good point, Jonathan.
Yeah, that's probably a bit more dramatic, right?
Has that been brought to the board for documenting?
No, that one is still, we're still working with the city very closely. The group that owned it sold it to an owner who then contacted us and the city and said, the city, I think, wasn't going to issue an emergency demo for that one. Because it was falling and going to collapse onto the street.
Did issue one.
And,
but it hasn't been done.
But now the new owner wants to try to save it. So we'll be back to you on that one.
So wait, so a city issues an emergency demolition and then somebody can come around and say, I don't actually want you to.
Well, it has to go to court, right?
Yeah, right. Sorry. Thank you. Come back. This is an interesting one. We're glad you're here.
So if the city issues development services goes out and determines that the building is a public safety threat, then they inform code enforcement, who then issues an emergency demolition process. That process kicks in. It has to go to court. The judge has to say, okay, yeah, let's knock this down. And then the city can go on with their demo contractors and knock it down. The ownership of that building changed literally the day we sent notice that the building was going to be condemned or was going to be demolished. So with that, you know, the city tries to give everybody the benefit of the doubt,
right,
for better or worse. And that also means that we're trying to work with him now to get him. And we know that he's been in contact with Caitlin and the team here to figure out what he can and cannot do. And he's removed the pieces that were literally falling onto the neighbor's house. Mm-hmm. So currently he's as stable enough.
So the reason that the emergency demolition isn't holding is because the judge couldn't rule on it because the ownership changed.
Correct.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah, no problem.
So then actually follow-up question.
Okay.
Question from earlier. Where do we check to see whether or not something's been assessed by development services to qualify for emergency demolition?
Well, that's demolition? Me. So that's you. Yeah, what will start to happen is Kelly, Caitlin, Jonathan will reach out to me.
Uh-huh.
I can look through our city records and determine if anybody has visited it or inspected it at any period of time. And then that will allow us to figure out what next steps are best for it.
So do you know if this one was analyzed and determined not eligible for emergency?
I do not know. I did not do the research prior to coming to the meeting today. But I did shoot development services an email during this meeting and asked, and no one's gotten back to me yet.
Okay, so that'll be good in the future to know, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I feel like you're going to email me a lot.
No. No. I'll summarize. I'll put all the emails into a summary.
It's all good. I'm a public servant. It's my job.
We're going to be best friends. Yeah, so we don't know. So anyway, so we don't know. So that one does, I mean, have pretty huge bearing.
Again, I would say, like, I mean, based on Victory Drive and my personal experience thus far, if it was a threat of immediately causing public safety damage, then the city would have taken the steps in the past 5 to 6 months that it's been.
Okay, so barring getting that information to contradict our guess, I'm going to go ahead and assume, as of right now, that this one doesn't meet the criteria of emergency demolition, according to the city, which encourages me to, you know, to continue to advocate for what I said before, only approving removal of the damaged elements at this point. And then
fire damage part.
Yeah, the fire. Yeah.
No, I get it.
Yeah. We want to eliminate the public hazard without losing our historic building if we don't need to.
Understood.
Whenever possible.
Understood. Yep. Understood.
Awesome. So we got kind of all off track as far as the order of how we did this with public comment and petition. No, it's awesome. No, it's great because it was a really spirited discussion. We've had the time to really explore this in depth, and it's an area that is, you know, something that requires that level of discussion. And that's why we kind of free flowed it there. And I'm really glad. I think everybody's a lot more informed. But now, Ed, there's no more public comment, no more comment from a petitioner or anybody else or any further board discussion. Let's look at what a motion may look like. And I'm gonna throw it to you, May, because you're the deconstruction demolition expert.
I did stick my foot in that one. Okay, this is May Boley, and I move that the historic. I'm gonna just swing at this. Please weigh in. I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of ANC Brock Holdings LLC 24-000-4042-COA. With the following conditions. One, that the building must be documented per the MPC policy for documenting buildings. And two, rather than traditional demolition, the portions of the building which have been irreparably damaged by the fire be demolished or deconstructed and any salvageable materials be salvaged for reuse. Condition three, that the reparable and salvageable elements of the historic building be stabilized for restoration. And I gotta keep going. Because the position is otherwise in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance.
Katrina Horning, I second the motion.
I was just gonna say, do we need to add in to complete the application? With the supporting document, but okay. She seconded,
she seconded now, so we have to take a vote. Yeah. But
we have to vote no,
and then we have to have it make an amendment to amend the. Yeah,
that was quick though. We like the quick draw. No,
it's good. So
all right, vote it down, everyone.
Pat Richardson, no.
Catherine Levine, no.
May Boley, no.
Katrina Hornung, no.
Kirsten Connor, deny.
Virginia Mobley, no.
Pam Miller, no.
Okay, so can I have a
motion
refined?
Okay, I'm gonna try again.
Motion.
Thank you. Not really, but thank you. All right, this is May Boley. I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of ANC Brock Holdings LLC 24-000-4042-COA with the following conditions. One, the building must be documented per the MPC policy for documenting buildings. Two, rather than traditional demolition, only the elements which have been irreparably damaged by the fire be demolished or deconstructed and any viable materials be salvaged for reuse. Three, that the remaining portions of the historic building be stabilized in preparation for a restoration. And four, that the remaining and missing materials for the demolition application, which staff did not require due to expediency, be submitted for staff approval after this meeting. Because the petition is otherwise in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance.
Katrina Hornung, I second the motion.
Pat.
Pat Richardson, approved.
Kathy Levine, approved.
May Boley, approved.
Katrina Hornung, approved.
Kirsten Connor, approved.
Virginia Mobley, approved.
Pam Miller, approved.
That motion passes. Thank you. Okay, good. So we have, that's a really good, really heartfelt discussion. Thank you for the input from HPC and the city. We really got a lot of knowledge out of that today. So we have no approved staff reviews to look at, notices, proclamations, and acknowledgements. Can we have somebody
make a motion to acknowledge those. Do we have, no, let's see. No. Other business? Is there any other business we need to talk about today? Oh, there is. Yes. We brought it up. So apparently, we have to set up nomination committees. Correct?
Correct.
Because apparently they have to be in existence throughout the year. And I'm looking for volunteers for nomination committees for any processes that we need to move forward with. So when we're looking at next year's chairperson and next year's vice chair, any subcommittees, et cetera, we need to have people who will sit on the nominating committee and consider who those people might be.
So Kathy Levine, I volunteer to be on the nominating committee.
All right.
Katrina Hornung, I volunteer to be on the nominating committee.
Okay. Three will be good. So one more. Pat?
Pat, we just sent
a volunteer. All right, thank you. Volunteer. So, for the record, these are our nominating committee members. Thank you. All right. Aside from that, I'm going to make a motion to adjourn. Our next pre-meeting will be Wednesday, September the 25th at 1:30. And the next meeting will be 25th of September at 2 p.m. All right, the motion to adjourn.
Thank you all for your time.
Motion to adjourn.
All right.
Jonathan, I've got a question.
Maybe only a second.
No, it's fine. It's good. We're good. Thank you. Thank you all very much, folks. Have a great week, month.